What started with Harvey Weinstein in October has made its way into scientific research. Women across the sciences have been tweeting and speaking about sexual assault and sexual harassment, and one of them is Julia Baum, an associate professor in the Department of Biology at the University of Victoria. She's a leading coral researcher, and she joins me in studio this morning to talk more about it. Professor Baum, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How bad is the issue in general of sexism in science, in your assessment?
Sexism in science is pervasive. It's absolutely pervasive. And I think it happens in a number of ways. It happens in the form of very overt sexual assault and sexual harassment. And it happens in more insidious, subtle ways through unconscious or implicit bias, which is the biases that we all have that we often aren't even aware that we are perpetuating when we make decisions.
I wonder how much of this is just a reflection of society at large, or is there something about the world of research that might make it particularly susceptible to sexism? What are your thoughts?
I think that this is really reflective of society at large. Unfortunately, I would like to be able to say it's only in this one segment, but I think what we've seen really broadly in the media since the Harvey Weinstein case broke is that women are finding their voice in whatever profession they work in, and so stories are coming out from almost every professional sector, whether it be the entertainment industry or the tech sector. And it's been very vocal in academia. I do think within my own field, ecology, where we spend a lot of time in the field. So we go out and we do field work. I think that combined with the fact that we do have a very hierarchical system where you've got young undergraduates and graduate students and you have professors. And so you often have the men in a position of power, the women as the students, and then these hierarchies are going out to the field, often to remote locations, and that's certainly not the only place that the bad behavior takes place, but it is one place where it seems particularly pervasive because it's maybe far removed from society, from the institution, and I think men feel like they can get away with it, and they have been getting away with it until now. And so I think now is the moment where many women are finding their voices. I certainly have found my voice, and I think we are all speaking up about it, and I really feel like it's a watershed moment, and we have an opportunity to make change right now.
Have you noticed any improvement during your career in science, maybe if you think back to your days as an undergrad to now that you're an associate professor? Have you seen any improvement, or is that really still to come?
Well, that's such an interesting question. I do think that there are improvements for sure in general. When I was doing my undergraduate degree at McGill University, there were no female professors in the department who were married with kids. And the message that sent to me as a young female scientist was, I can't have a career and family. And now I see myself and so many of my colleagues doing just that. And so I hope that we provide a positive role model for young women who are studying the sciences. But I think on the other end of the spectrum, so yes, I think things are improving. But at the same time, for me personally, as you move up the ranks, that's when you eventually hit your head on the glass ceiling and come ricocheting off it. And that's when you really start to feel the pervasive sexism in science.
Now, what would account for the glass ceiling now? I wonder what you think is, I was going to say, behind it. What's above it? What accounts for it being there?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I mean, it's often referred to as the leaky pipeline in science, and it's referred to that because we know that at the undergraduate level and even at the graduate level in many sciences now, we have gender parity. There mm-hmm. are as many women as men studying for undergraduate degrees in the sciences, and that often is the same at the master's level and even at the doctorate level. And then when you get to the postdoctorate level, the women start to fall out, and that's referred to as the leaky pipeline. And then as you go further and further up through the professorships, there are fewer and fewer women. And there are, you know, a lot of studies trying to understand what contributes to that. But I would say that it is all these forms of sexism. And I think that gender bias in general has been really recognized. But the ingredient that people haven't been talking about is sexual assault and sexual harassment, which I think probably plays a pretty key role in accounting for women just getting out altogether. Because there has been no recourse really until I would say this fall, where people are finally starting to speak out, and it seems like we're no longer going to stand for it.
Well, I don't want to simplify the solution, but I wonder, and you tell me how much you think it goes beyond that, but what do you think universities and other, you know, scientific agencies and whomever the employer or the institution is should be doing in response to try to remedy this?
Well, I think that institutions need to be holding their employees accountable, and I think that the institutions themselves need to be held accountable. So we know that in the UK, they have a very successful program called the Athena Swan Program, which is a program that celebrates and rewards gender equity and diversity measures. Australia has recently adopted a very similar program modeled after the Athena Swan. And I was recently at the Gender Summit meeting in Montreal, which is the first time that Canada has hosted the Gender Summit. And there was a lot of talk there about how can we implement an Athena Swan-like program in Canada. And the purpose of that really is to both hold universities accountable, but also celebrate their achievements when they're doing things right, because all of the evidence shows that you need both accountability and incentives.
But correct me if I'm wrong, that sounds like that would address equity, you know, like, I mean, numbers of female versus male on staff and so on. But what in addition might address the issue of assault and harassment that you referenced?
Right. So I think
that would be a start.
I think that goes partway there, quite a long way there, actually. But the other real step is having universities take those accounts seriously, and then holding their professors accountable and basically dismissing them if there's enough evidence. And we've seen a recent example like that at Boston University, where David Marchand, one of their very well-known professors, was accused of sexual assault and harassment in the field that he had perpetrated against many grad students while with them doing fieldwork in Antarctica, so you couldn't really be at a more isolated location. They have had over 30 women come forward with complaints against him, and I believe he is now suspended. But universities need to really be taking these things seriously. And I think that we are at a turning point where, until very recently, universities were protecting the professors because they were star researchers often. And now I think we're at the point, especially with the Harvey Weinstein incident, where universities, I think, realize that that's no longer acceptable, or at the very least that they're no longer going to get away with that.
But presumably, though, there will always be some cases where it's just difficult for administrators or universities to gauge, you know, what's actually happened or happening, though, aren't there? And that's not to justify many egregious examples, but presumably that it'd be difficult to get to a case where nothing happens, wouldn't it?
I think it is really difficult, and I think it depends where the burden of proof lies. I think that in the David Marchand case, for example, as I said, over 30 women have come forward, but only a subset of the complaints, I don't want to say, are being taken seriously, but the university has found that there is only sufficient evidence, you know, to hold him accountable for a subset of the complaints. So I think these things are difficult, and it's particularly difficult because a lot of times it takes a long time for women to come forward. So I'm hoping that that's one thing, that the process gets sped up, because women now know that it's safe to come forward.
We just have a minute left, but I wonder finally how optimistic you are that this is, as you mentioned, perhaps a real turning point and a real time for change.
Well, I am optimistic, but I do think that we all have to become proactive about this. And I think that all of us, you know, can take this as a moment for a bit of self-reflection about the privilege that we all have, whether it be male privilege or white privilege. We all walk around with a certain amount of privilege. And I think that this is a really key moment for us to reflect on that and think about how we can all work towards a more equitable and diverse society.
Professor Baum, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks so much.
Julia Baum is an associate professor in the Department of Biology at the University of Victoria. It's 2 minutes to 8 o'clock, and Emily Brass is here with the local...